97.5, The Fanatic.
Welcome back to 97.5 The Fanatic. D-Line, I'm with you on this Friday evening. We have real sports happening. The Sixers played their first game, albeit an exhibition game, in the Orlando bubble, and it was a victory. The Phillies are going to have to come out of a hole to have a victory at Citizens Bank Park. They currently trail the Marlins 5-1 on opening day for them. But to go back to basketball and discuss today's events in the Sixers' 90-83 victory over the Memphis Grizzlies, we go to the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast, and we check in with Coach Lynam. What's going on, Coach? How are you tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right. I think there was a lot of optimism when the Sixers game was all said and done. And we'll start with the biggest thing people wanted to see was what that starting five would look like. Shake at the point guard position, Ben Simmons moving to the power forward position. And by looking at Twitter, I always look at what's trending, and Simmons is trending in a big, big way. Did you get a chance to see his performance?
Yes, Dee. I watched the first half and I guess most of the third quarter. And then I taped it. I'll watch the remainder. I guess that was mop-up time because I saw, I think, everybody on the 15-man roster got into the game.
Correct.
They had such a big, big lead. And as I heard you say earlier, you know, it's a scrimmage game. So, you know, you're supposed to experiment and hopefully learn some things from these type of games.
So Simmons at the power forward, I think a lot of people were concerned. Why are you taking the ball out of this guy's hands? It's one of his great assets that he brings to the table. And in the first 6 minutes, he had 4 assists. And before all is said and done, he ended up with 9 and only 1 turnover in his 23 minutes. That along with him shooting from the outside. If you were to describe what you saw when he took his 2 3-pointers, how would you say?
Yeah, it's funny because Azu actually, you know, he wanted to make, you know, a dramatic point, and rightly so. He said, "I have to interrupt you." Allah was offering a thought when he made that shot. But the thought that popped into my head was, if I didn't know that he was a reluctant shooter, you would never know have known. Watching him play this game.
I totally agree, but I also said it's nothing we've seen before.
No, we haven't seen it, but I'm just going, you know, on this one game. You know, he had shots in the flow, and he shot the 2 of them. You know, it's he just seemed very comfortable. I think we'll see. I want to see it. We have 2 more scrimmages, and then, you know, quote, the seeding games begin. So let's see if he can, you know, perform like that, you know, meaning shooting open shots in the flow and be comfortable doing it and not worrying about percentages. I think a lot of times players who have a reputation of being, let's say, a so-so shooter, it becomes a bit mental and they become a little too preoccupied with, you know, grabbing a stat sheet and what did I shoot tonight from outside.
When you saw, because they do make this change of, you know, putting him at the 4, and it was thought because Shake gives you some outside shooting in addition to being able to handle the ball, did you see better spacing with the starting 5?
No, I can't say. You know, again, a scrimmage game, I don't want to overstate it. I did see very good spacing when Shake was playing, but that was in Ben's absence. So it's not a fair sample.
Right.
But to be determined, I think, is what I would say. And I think they're doing a good thing, meaning when the Sixers get a stop, so Memphis shoots the ball and misses, like they're looking to get that ball in Ben's hands a lot in that situation.
Correct.
You know, really, which is one of his best weapons, like being running the ball down the court against a defense that's not set. And conversely, when Memphis makes a shot, Well, now teams are more apt to be able to get back. So I think that's where you're seeing Shake doing a lot of the handling and Ben looking to run out. And, you know, they do a good job of throwing the ball ahead. So he'll get some offensive opportunities after the other team scores by somebody like maybe Joel inbounding quickly to Shake. Shake with like one dribble and throwing ahead to Ben, who's running a lane.
So in the beginning, I'm saying to myself, oof, this offense looks stagnant. There's Joel shooting jumper after jumper. This is just how I felt. And I was saying, you know, fortunately for them, defensively, they're pretty strong and they end up only allowing 12 first quarter points. What did Joel look like to you?
I guess he took one of those threes and the thought popped in my head. Now I'm sure people are saying, you know, what's he doing out there? No, I didn't have any problem with Joel offensively. I'll tell you what he is, and you alluded to it because I heard you when I was driving in the car. He is such a monster at the defensive end of the
Correct.
Court. He just shuts the lane down. And when you have all that length and quickness and athleticism on the perimeter and Joel Embiid back there as a stopper, I mean, this team really potentially, I hate to overstate it, you know, this is a scrimmage game, 10-minute quarters in an empty gym in Orlando, so coach don't get carried away. Having said that, I'll get carried away. I mean, potentially they're as good as anybody in this league at the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I agree. And I, to me, there was nothing that showed they missed a beat defensively. And I was just looking at the regular guys, not by the time they let the 29-point lead go. I mean, that's just a lot of people playing. But in the guts of what we're supposed to be analyzing, I thought defensively they can hang their hat there and be pretty strong against anybody.
Yeah, I would agree. To your question, I don't like to play expert. I'm not in that gym every day for practice. But I will say this as an educated fan, and I'm not trying to be flip saying it that way. Obviously, I think I know what I'm watching. Matisse Thybulle has to be part of this action. He just makes too many things happen at the defensive end. He's a disruptor. He's a tremendous help defender. And he wouldn't have to do a whole lot for me at the offensive end. Like, don't make mistakes. Don't throw the ball away. Hopefully make an open shot once in a while. But this guy's value at that other end of the court, I mean, I know he's young, but he is really a very, very good defender.
Well, so my question to the people, just going from today's game, if you had to make an 8-man rotation, we know who the 6 are. Who are your other 2? And I said Matisse, and you can debate the other spot, but Matisse is a have to for me as well. So, I think
right now I would have my 8th right now. Which
I know who mine is.
Okay, go ahead.
Mine is Korkmaz.
Amen.
Yeah, and the minute he got on the court, he went to the corner and knew he was getting a pass from Ben, and he knocked down his 3.
Yep, that was also off of Ben Seal at the other end.
Yes.
He stole a lob pass. He gets the ball and drives it 94 feet and lays a 3 in Korkmaz's lap. Now, I think I would agree with you, Dave. Not only because Korkmaz, he shoots up toward 40%. I think he was at 39 when we stopped playing. But I like the way he's improved. He plays with a lot more poise now. He moves. I like the fact he doesn't just stand around. He'll put the ball, not a great, you know, go-to-the-basket guy, but he puts it on the floor enough now to keep the defense honest. I think he fits, with what they're trying to do at the offensive end. And he's capable, obviously, of a big game.
Yeah, I mean, I have some callers who like Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks for their, you know, they would trust those two more than Korkmaz. I'm not in that camp. I think the kid is the best outside shooter this group has, and I want to know that I can give him a role that he knows he's going to keep getting it, because if you start playing with that, I think you play with the kid's head, but that's just me.
No, you're making a good point. Now, I will say this. I identify with what those fans said, that trusting Glenn Robinson III, trusting Alec Burke, and for me, you could throw Mike Scott in there. I trust all three of those guys. What that really speaks to, this team has very, very good depth. Now, when you come playoff time, it's good insurance in the event somebody goes down. But you can, that can come back to bite you. You mentioned this again when I was in the car. I heard you say it, that during this stretch, meaning the start of these scrimmage games through the seeding games, hopefully they'll get some form of rotation, like who your top eight are. And that doesn't say you can't have a top nine if that's what they deem to do. But for me, I don't want to see a game like where Korkmaz only plays 4 minutes.
Correct.
Or say the same thing about Thibel. Those two guys, for me, have to be givens that they're getting consistent minutes. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 24, 25 minutes.
No, I hear you.
Put them on the court, and, you know, just if you give guys an opportunity, then on a night, let's say Korkmaz is hot, he can go out and get you 25 to 30 and win you a game.
Sure.
And I think Thibel the same way. If he's out there, you know, for 14, 16 minutes, then all of a sudden on a given night, that balloons to 22. He scores double figures, makes a couple of threes, and, like, gets five steals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in this thing, he had three. Well, first of all, his same as Furkan makes a three the minute he gets on the court. The first possession of Thibel's coming off the bench, he gets a steal.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, one of the reasons he gets as many steals and deflections that he does, he's always in the right spot. He constantly, like, somebody starts to penetrate, and he's a little bit on the other side of the court. He's just like, you can see, he's like just waiting to fire and jump in that lane, that driving lane. And the guy makes a, you know, a pass, and he's so long, he gets a hand on the ball, and all of a sudden the Sixers are on a break going the other way.
All right, I have to ask you about Al Horford. Did he look comfortable in his role for you?
I don't want to say he looked uncomfortable, but I didn't particularly notice him. Now, I want to be like fair here. I didn't really notice Shake that much when he was out on the court.
Fair enough.
I noticed Ben Simmons. You know, Ben played was all over the place. I noticed Tobias, and you said it. Tobias, he might be one of the top players, what I call quietly effective, one of the most top-line, quietly effective guys in this league. What I have known, he was going to be the leading rebounder and get the double-figure rebounds, and I didn't even see a box to know how many minutes. Well, he probably only played 25 minutes.
He played 23 minutes. He gave him 15 points, 10 boards, 6 of 11 from the floor. He was really the only guy who went to the offensive glass. He got 4 of their 7 offensive rebounds, and he was really the only guy who went to the foul line. He was 3 of 4.
There you go. Yeah, no, to your point, we were talking about, did I like what I thought of Horford? I like Al Horford. Al Horford fits. Al Horford is never going to hurt you. But if out of the starting lineup, you know, like his minutes are going to diminish. Now, I think he'll get comfortable is the word I'm looking for in that role. And, you know, because he's such a solid player, you know, as you know, he's a very, very good passer. So offense, when he's on the court, it always seems to, you know, function. The ball doesn't stick in anybody's hand, partly because of Al's ability to move the ball, to help a wing player by making a pass and running to set a pick or a dribble handoff. So I think he'll be a very, very key component to the second group on the court. And a lot of times, the Sixers have a great advantage. Their second unit a lot of times has either Joe or Ben on the court.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Big advantage.
Coach, it's opening day for the Phillies. Did you ever go to an opening day game ever?
I did on a few occasions way back. I want to say one time, as you know, my nephew Chris DeJulia is a huge, huge Philly fan. And he and I always will try to catch a game or two during the year. But I think we went to an opener one year, yes.
Well, sports are back, that's for sure. And that's good news for a lot of people who, you know, life just isn't normal. And maybe this brings a little normalcy to them in terms of entertainment in some way, shape, or form.
No, I think you're right on, D. We were having a conversation the other day on the golf course, Herb McGee and I, about, you know, what sports as a part of American culture. I mean, come on, it's a huge deal. I mean, I know that not every person, you know, is interested, but there are a lot of people that enjoy talking sports, whether it's golf, one of the major sports, you know, right on down the line. I'm not a big soccer guy, but there's a, you know, there's a soccer community. Sports is a big part of American life.
Absolutely. By the way, just out of curiosity, because you did watch part of it, I thought the production value, I didn't feel like I was watching something different than when I watch games, you know, in the before in March.
Yeah, that's interesting. The only problem for me, and I don't think it was a visual problem, on some occasions I had trouble identifying the players. And I think I'm right on this. I think Mark Zumok did on a couple occasions, too.
Sure.
I think he confused Matisse and Tobias on a couple of occasions.
Ah.
Yeah, because, you know, Tobias has that new look.
Sure.
You know, on a quick glance, you know, out there in a distant shot on the court, you could, they look
right.
Similar one to the other on occasion.
Yes. Well, it's funny you bring that up because they said the same thing with like a home run ball. Not necessarily, like normally you know if it's going when you're there at the ballpark, but if you're depending right. on the monitor, you don't have the same advantage of being able, is it going to make it? So they were talking about that the other day.
Yeah. That's interesting because I was thinking tonight, I mean, for Mark and for Allah, you know, you're calling the game looking at the monitor. You know, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No, it's certainly different than what you're used to.
Of course. I'm like something as simplistic, you know, the casual fan might not appreciate, like, knowing whether something is a foul or not. When you're in the building, the first thing, when you hear the whistle, you look at the ref and see if he puts his hand up.
Right.
If he puts his hand up, it's a foul. Now you hear a whistle, you're not sure what it is.
Wow. I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of subtleties that, kudos to those guys. I thought the two of them did a very, very good job.
I agree. You know,
calling a game for 3,000 or what?
Miles away. Exactly. All right, Coach, I appreciate your Friday night time. I hope you have a good weekend in store for yourself. And if you hit the golf ball, hit it straight.
That's always a good idea. Let me write that one down. Yeah, good thought. All right. Enjoy as always, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. All right. Coach seems pretty optimistic, but I liked it. He had, you know, some subtle tones of he didn't really notice Shake, and he didn't really notice Al Horford. But neither is a bad thing per se. But I would say that's fair. Shake didn't do anything spectacular, but he also didn't hurt yet. And I thought he had a big three early that kind of set the tone of, all right, our offense is going to come along here, and we're going to be able to make some shots. What'd you think, Dylan? Did he anything jump out at you that Coach Lynam left us?
Well, if there's ever something I notice about basketball that Coach doesn't, that'll be a first. I find it hard to believe that I'm going to pick up on something that
I meant, did he say something that stood out that we should be like reiterating for him to the people? I think most of it was. He did temper most of his thing, saying it was the first scrimmage. So let's see a little more. I mean, he wants to see a little more of Ben being who Ben was today.
Oh, yeah. But the fact that he also picked up on that it was a different type of shot from Ben. It wasn't the few we saw before. It was
in rhythm.
Yeah, in rhythm, comfortable.
Yep.
This catch and shoot, and that's promising. I'm not saying it's going to be every game.
No, but
it's promising.
He definitely felt promised or promising, but he definitely wants more to evaluate, if you will. So we should just go back through. Ben Simmons, 4 of 9 from the floor, 1 of 2 from three. He had 7 boards. We didn't even mention his rebounding. 7 boards, 9 assists. 3 steals. He and Matisse each had 3 steals. And Ben finished with 9 points. So, and he will be, my guess, he will be some part of the headline of the Sixers story in the paper tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it didn't.
It's got to be some clever phrase that's playing off of Ben.
And another good sign is it didn't seem to change any of the good parts of Ben's game. He was still super aggressive on defense. He was still distributing the ball. I mean, 9 assists and
in a game that's
shortened. Right. It's 8 less minutes in the game than there usually is.
Yeah.
The worries people had of like, oh, you're going to mess up his game by moving him to... It didn't happen. It's helping him more. Him having the chance to occasionally be off ball is helping him, but it's not taking away from what he's so good at.
Exactly. And what it did is it's broadening his horizons. So it's allowing him to see that being off the ball is not punishment. Being off the ball is allowing you to show people you have more, amazingly more than what your all-star self already is. If we take you off the ball, you can do more. Can you imagine? We can continue talking about the Philadelphia 76ers and their startup in the Orlando bubble and what that looked like today in the first of 3 scrimmage games. So we'll revisit some of the highlights as well. But the Phillies are also playing right now, and they are trailing the Marlins 5-1 at home. Aaron Nola gave up 3 runs, and now, as I mentioned, it's a 5-1 deficit in the bottom of the 7th. But we want to check in with Lance, who wants to talk about the Phillies in Arizona. And Lance, what's going on?
Hey, dude, this is the exact same thing they did last year. This is the exact same thing. They play the Marlins, who are not very good.
And they always
come out flat.
Yes.
And they don't play good. And they lose games. Like, they went 9-10 last year. You can't afford to be 500 against the Marlins this year and make plus. I get there's 8 teams, but your schedule is loaded because you're playing a schedule based off of everyone in the East. You can't lose games to the Marlins. Like you did it last year, and it showed it didn't work over a full season. Now you're doing it in a shortened season. You're going to wind up missing the playoffs when there's 8 teams. I guarantee this is that's what's going to happen because they don't hit the ball when they're supposed to hit the ball. Like this guy, he's good. He's a good pitcher, but they're not even making him work. He has 86 pitches in the bottom of the 7th inning.
Oh my goodness!
Way up in the hundreds if you're batting correctly, and they're not doing it. It's the same frustrating thing that you saw last year, this year, and it's not the manager. Like, I think it's a cultural thing. Like, I look at it this way. You didn't build your team through drafting and building them up. Those teams in the early or the late 2000s, the reason why they got so good was because Utley came up and was through the Phillies. Howard, Rollins, you had a whole bunch of guys, Alitz, Hamill, a bunch of guys, Carlos Ruiz, through the system. You just built a team by paying everyone. And it doesn't work. Like, you're not the Yankees. You can't pay for the premier guys. You're getting guys who are good, besides Harper, you're getting guys that are good, not great.
So even with some of the changes, like, for instance, McCutchen being back at the leadoff spot,
I don't think McCutchen's ever going to be the same that he was. I think people are putting way too much on Andrew McCutchen's just going to be Andrew McCutchen. He's 33 years old coming off an ACL. He might never be the same.
How about the addition of Aditi?
I like Aditi Gonzalez. He's a good player. However, the problem is you still have Segura on the team. I think he's a problem child. I think that's why the Mariners traded him. I think that's why he was traded to the Mariners. I think he's a guy in your locker room. Like, people wanted to get bad on Bobby Abreu when he was here. I think Segura's attitude is way worse than Bobby Abreu's is.
Mm.
And, like, he cost you McCutchen last year because of his attitude.
Right. How about it? Oh, yeah, that injury.
So I look at it this way, and then I look at it this. You didn't fix the bullpen. The bullpen is just a bunch of young guys. And I saw the guy after he came in for Nola. That guy should be in Triple A because he needs to work on his control, and you have him out there just – he has the stuff to be in Major League, but he doesn't have the control right now. So you're asking him to do it. And then you let Francisco Liriano go. He's a veteran guy. That's a guy you want out there in case Nola only gets through 5 1/3, so you have him for 2 innings to get to the guys in the back of the bullpen, and you just let him go for no reason. To go with younger guys that you don't have no clue what's going to do. And I haven't even talked about starting pitching. I like Aaron Nola. I think he's a number 2. I don't think Zach Wheeler's worth the money that you paid him. I think he's a number 3. You should have just went all out to go get Gerrit Cole because he's a number 1 pitcher. If you're going to spend on pitching, you better
get the best. Yep.
Especially if you're going to play this game with JT Realmuto, and I guarantee if he leaves, their reason is to be, well, the pandemic hit, and so we didn't have as much money as we thought we were going to spend them on. You made that trade knowing you were going to have to overpay him. You knew that when you made that trade because he had all the leverage at that point.
Yep.
You should have paid him at that point, just like Bill O'Brien screwed up with Laremy Tunsil and he had to pay even more for Laremy Tunsil after he got him.
Yes.
You should have skipped arbitration for 2 years, just overpaid him with a 7-year contract at that point, so you got his prime years where you're overpaying, instead of now having to pay him, overpay him at 30 and have add 2 more years out of his prime onto that deal.
Lance, it sounds like you're frustrated and it's only opening day.
I mean, I've been frustrated with the Phillies anyway. It's like I didn't like their offseason. Besides Didi and Gloria, that was the only one that I liked. I didn't like the Wheeler one. I don't think he's going to wind up being worth the money. I didn't think they should have kept Rhys Hoskins because I don't think he's as good as people think he is. And he's going to wind up in arbitration making more money than he should. And you're not going to give him that second contract, so you might as well get something for him now. And I would have traded Segura because I just don't think he's a good fit on the team. But...
All right. Well, we'll see what happens in this Marlins series, but I agree with you. You can't start and you can't have it duplicate what they did against them last year, or you're going to be, as you mentioned,
one of the Yankees next.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I know.
You go one and two against them, you might go 0-3 against the Yankees. You're 1-5. You might never recover from that.
No, I know. I know. Hey, Lance, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. 610-632-0975. I mean, if you're watching the Phils right now, there's a lot of good points Lance just pointed out. And again, it's only game one, but it's game one of 60. 60 in 66 days. It's coming fast and furious. And they have one run on the board. Also, the Sixers. So they'll play not tomorrow, but Sunday. How can they build on what they did today? 610-632-0975. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, I want to tell you all about the Fanatics Deal of the Week. It's back with the Ron Jaworski Golf Passport. Play a round of each of Jaws' 6 area courses, plus a free 7th round on number 7 and a bonus round at Honey Run Golf Club. That's 8 rounds of golf for just $89. It's available now at 975thefanatic.com. And the keyword is deal. It's a deal, all right. Love that. Golf pass. All right, so we had the Sixers winning their first scrimmage game. We have the Phillies trailing now 5-2 down there at Citizens Bank Park in their opening day. So sports, they're back. And I'm curious just how it feels for people to have this live action. And it's not, you know, the Arkansas Derby or the Korean Baseball League. These are your teams, your players, your fans of these groups. And now you get to see them back doing their jobs. And what is that like for you? And it's only going to increase because, you know, opening day, this matters. In a 60-game sprint, you can ill afford to fall behind. And so, you know, the Phillies hosting the Marlins and trailing 5-2 when you had Nola on the hill to only have the 2 runs to speak of. Eh. And as our previous caller, Lance, pointed out, like not making the Marlins pitcher have to work very hard. Got to make them work. And this is a team that had the Phillies number a year ago. So we have that. And what we have from the Sixers is a lot of positive. I mean, really, there's not much I can harp on in terms of what the Sixers did against the Grizzlies today. Defensively, they continue to be the team defensively that you think they are. And in particular, when Joel Embiid is on the floor, it's a game changer. because they have these very, very strong perimeter defenders, but he is a beast in the paint. So that part was true. Ben Simmons playing the four was solid. His shooting was smooth. It did not hurt his ability to create. He finished with 9 assists. Tobias Harris, steady Eddie. Matisse Thybulle is going to have this town excited. They'll be calling for this rookie to get more and more time. So we had that in terms of the basketball. Let's check in with Anthony, and I think Anthony wants to talk some football. Anthony, how are you? And thank you for calling the Fanatic. I'm doing all right. What's going on in your world on this Friday night?
Well, I'm a first-time caller, so I've been thinking about this Redskins controversy over a name.
Yes.
So I thought of something that's not political and it's not racial, and it still maintains the last four letters, skin, S-K-I-N. And the thought that I have is the Washington Pigskins. And on that football, you would put it on the side of the helmet, a little football. On top of that, you would have a piglet riding on the football because the Washington Redskins always had the hogs behind their goalposts, their fans, their cheering section.
Oh, right. Right.
So if you call them the Washington Pigskins, it's not political, it's not racial, it's neutral. It fits with the last four letters being skin, and I think it hits the spot.
Well, it's a very good thought on your part. It seems to me they are so hesitant to commit to anything, and I don't think they will for this upcoming season, which is they've come out and said they're going to be Washington, the football team. I mean, I've never heard of anything, so.
Well, you're right. I didn't know it was just, I thought it was temporary until that something.
Well, it is. It's temporary, but I think they're putting the whole thing on the shelf or going to continue to debate it. But I don't think they have any intention of having the name during this upcoming season.
I see. But I talked to a couple of guys, and they didn't know that I was thinking about this, and I told them my thought about that name, and they loved it. They said, "Hey, that hits the spot, man."
I'm curious.
Where did you get it from? I said, "I just thought about it." I said, "You know what? The football is a pigskin.
It is, absolutely.
And a little piglet riding that football on the side of their helmet. All the Washington fans would love that."
I'm curious. Are you a Washington fan, or you were just brainstorming?
I'm a lifelong Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Got you.
My uncle lives down in Rockville, Maryland. They're Redskins fans, but I'm saying, what is so hard about coming up with a name? And so I thought about it and thought about it. I said, wait a minute. The football is a pigskin. The hogs are their cheering section for years now behind the goalposts. But a small hog would be a piglet. On top of the football, on the side of the helmet, would be their new logo. I think they go wild over that down there.
I think maybe you should send them a note.
I don't know how to. See, that's what I don't know how to do. I don't know how to contact the Redskins customer service or any of that.
Maybe I'll forward it to somebody who I know down in Washington. They'll do it.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it because I think it would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Eagles fan gave them a name.
Anthony, good brainstorming on your part.
All right, Rhea, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
You got it. Take care. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. 610-632-0975. We got live sports happening on this Friday, and it's then coming up on Tuesday, you have Eagles training camp, which is going to happen as well. And on Tuesday is also a Flyers scrimmage. I believe we have a doubleheader that day because it's a Flyers scrimmage and a Sixers scrimmage. And so then on that day, you will have, if you are a 4-for-4, you have all four happening. Let's check in with Chris in Pensauken. And Chris, how are you? Thanks for calling the Fanatic. What's going on in your world?
What's up, Dave? Haven't talked to you in a little bit.
I know. What's going on?
Trying to keep the doors open in my facility, man. They're not even doing their wash. It's crazy.
Ooh.
I don't know if they're eating their clothes or, but we're hanging tough. Love the last gentleman. Here's the situation why the Redskins can't come up with a name. There was either a doctor or an attorney, if you Google it up. He's pretty slick when he just, for the past 2 years, he just started copywriting all the names that the Redskins could be.
Oh.
So he can get paid. And I'm not offended, but once you put that Pigskins in front of it, my dad's a retired police officer for 30 years.
Yeah, it won't fly now.
Especially
now.
No.
I just thought, yeah, I didn't even think of that when he was on the film, but now I am.
And,
yeah.
And they're a total backwards organization. I won't want to be anything associated with them, but I got to tell you, one thing I do give them credit, they came out, and that's the right thing to do. Just call them, just say we're the NFL Washington football team.
So you got, at this
moment, if you're part of the Redskins or you're a Redskin fan, you gotta protect yourself at all costs, because anything you say, they're going to check it twice.
Absolutely. So, to be honest, I mean, obviously they had to do something because advertising was being pulled, but they have deeper problems as a whole organization. They must rebrand themselves and correct their culture.
Yeah, that's crazy. Thank God we don't have anything like that up here. But getting to the Sixers, and you know I'm tough on Brett at times, and I got ticket center. I don't have to tell you every time I call for years and years and years. Actually, since 1983, when everybody's like, Philly was a basketball city. Even when your dad coached, when they were good, man, Dave Hardy ever sold that. My family's had ticket center since 1976, which is a shame because I love hoops. That's they're my top 2-3 sports.
Absolutely.
I'm just disappointed that it took this long of desperation for Brett Brown from the time they drafted that kid to saying he was going to be a point forward, and then he came out a week later and said he was going to be a point guard, and it took you 4 years to do it because you're nervous about losing your gig. And that's just upsetting because you can tell the kid's going to be a beast. You saw him tonight. It doesn't matter where you play him. He's all over the floor. And people just say, he's not good and everything else. He's in the top 5 defenders in the NBA. He can cover 1 through 5. He's a stud. He's a stud.
I will disagree with you that it was only Brett in that he's doing this now to save his job. I think Ben is an equal part. And prior to this, not wanting to be a power forward, not wanting to take outside shots. And he said as much in terms of needing help by seeing a sports psychologist, because he got to the point, the pressure, he did not want to do it. He wanted to show people, I do a lot of things really good, assists, steals, I forget how many things he pointed out. And he's like, I don't want to be a 30% three-point shooter. I want to be a 40. So if he doesn't take any, he's nowhere near either of those numbers.
I understand that. And you're a mom and I'm a dad. At the end of the day, the parents got to tell the child, you can't eat any more of that chocolate before you go to bed because you're going to get sick.
Right, except, but I can't make him shoot that shot.
No, I totally agree. I just love the kid. I think he gets, how about this, Dave?
Yes.
If you really think about it, I think this kid in the first 3 years, because he only played 3 years, he's been on the team 4.
Correct.
I think he gets bashed more than Donovan McNabb in this city. How about that?
I don't think he...
At least equally. I mean, that kid, he could have 27, 12, and 7, and I go, well, you don't shoot. Okay, well, so who cares?
Right, yeah. No, but the difference is I feel like, maybe.
My little brother brought that up to me last Sunday. He's like, think about it. Remember Donovan? Donovan used to chastise back then, doesn't, and he just still gets buried. I said, Salvatore, I can't believe you thought about that, because usually, the youngest brother out of the family, usually, he's not that sharp of a tool in the shed. But he came up with the idea. But real quick to the Phillies.
Yes.
I got to tell you, Dave. Noah, he's looking like the Noah from 2019, not 2018, dropping curveballs all over the white and nowhere near the black. And people are going to come out and say, well, it's only one game. Not when it's 60, man. Your proud mama. You're telling me how quick he runs all the time. I'm interested. I don't even run the Wawa. I drive.
Yeah.
And as you put your son, you can get your son right on the phone right now and he'll say, it's a 40-yard sprint right now, man. It ain't a 6-mile run.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, maybe you would agree with the last guy or two callers ago said that he doesn't see Nola as a number one. He thinks he's a number two.
I think he's a 2.5.
Yeah. Well, that's not going to be good, because if Wheeler isn't what they paid him to be, now you're...
And Wheeler's having a kid. And Wheeler's wife, God bless him. I congratulate him. They're having a baby. They're doing the right thing. He's not going to be here.
No, he is. He's pitching tomorrow.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
He already had the baby.
Oh.
Or he didn't. She did. They did.
Well, let me tell you something, man. I hope the stud catcher, he's in between. Clantock's about 10 blocks from my shop, and he's about 7 blocks from my shop. I hope he doesn't take things personally like I do, because I can be the grumpy old bear. When they took him to arbitration and say $2.5 million, if the New York Mets get sold, they're going to go after him. And if we lose that guy, I don't want to hear anything about Middleton, about I'm a competitor and all I want to do is win and blah, 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 and I'm not a potted plant. No. You don't get any excuses now, man. You should have signed that guy.
Does it look like stupid money to you?
Yeah, now we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Why would that kid sign now? He's going to hit free agency. Man.
I know.
Scares me, Dave. Love your family. Tell your son, keep running, because I ain't running for nothing except for a beer and making a steak on the grill like you know.
Excellent, excellent.
I'm scared of the Phillies and 10, 9, 8, 76ers. So Madison, hello. Peace, baby.
Chris, have a great weekend. Thank you for the phone call. The JT and not signing him and trading for him, there's a whole, that'll be a discussion for all of this 60-game sprint as a backdrop. I will be curious to see just what the reaction is to this opening day performance and what people feel. You know, I couldn't tell how optimistic they were. I mean, I heard a lot of people, I don't know, Dylan, in terms of the number of wins, losses for this group. I mean, I didn't hear anything above 33. Did you?
I think Rob picked to win, Rob Marty picked him to win like 35-ish.
All right.
Rob's been really high on them. I think a lot of people have been around the 30 to 33 range.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me, I'm just looking at what I read and people, you know, putting their 2 cents in on it. But I will agree with this. And again, I know it's only one game, but one game, every game will be scrutinized far greater in this season than in any other. And there is just no way that they can afford to be one of the eight, to not be in the 16 teams and make the postseason. I mean, that will not be acceptable in this city. When you went and hired Girardi and, you know, leadership was what you needed, I just can't see that will go over at all. I mean, major, and then what can you change? You can change your front office at that point, but haven't you created, your farm system isn't going to be helping you in the immediate future. Yeah, you have Spencer and you have Bohm, but what do they have much beyond that? Are they growing a product that can be coming up here?
Besides Oso, there's no other prospect that is
that's going to save.
I mean, there's Bryson Stott, but he's a good while away. There's a guy they took in this last draft who's out of high school, so he's a good while away.
Oh, yeah, I remember that kid.
Right now, the only reinforcements they have on the way are Howard, Bohm. There might be some guys down there who could be relief pitchers, but this is what you see is what you get right now.
Exactly. And if you don't have solid pitching, you know, we complained a lot last year about their bullpen. You know, if your starters are also in question, then, I mean, I just don't know how you immediately tend to fix this. And you're right. You know, JT was an easy, at least, fix for the fan base part of it. You lose that. And they also were pointing out the value. If you do have young pitchers that you're trying to develop, the value of having a guy like JT is invaluable, quite frankly. I don't know. We'll see. I'll be able to get a feel. I did see from Scott Lauber of the Philadelphia Inquirer, who just basically had posted when Nola went out of the game, and he said on Twitter, and this is why pitching depth matters more than ever in a 60-game sprint. Nola leaves, down 3-1, a runner on second after 77 pitches in six innings. And in a big league debut, Ramon Rosso goes walk, two wild pitches, RBI double to put the Phillies in a 5-1 hole. And right there, it's like, you know, what can you do? You can ill afford to do that. I mean, 3-1 was manageable. 5-1 becomes, you know, a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think it's fair to be concerned about the pitching. I'm not as concerned about the lineup. I think Bryce is going to hit. JT is going to hit. I don't know about Reese.
I was going to say, I don't know
about him yet. But I think McCutchen will eventually will hit.
And
I think it's
Gregorius will hit.
Right, and Gregorius can hit. Jay Bruce has power.
Sure.
Late, I think Kingery's going to be decent. I think the lineup's going to be good. Good to even maybe better than good. But the rotation, I'm not sure about. Nola needs to be better than he was tonight. I think Wheeler will be fine. I don't know about Arrieta, though. Vince Velasquez looks better, but we've seen him come and look better before. And then
he disappoints.
And then I don't know about Eflin. I guess the good news is Eflin might eventually be replaced by Howard.
Spencer Howard, yeah.
But, and then in the bullpen's completely a question mark. There's a lot of young guys who never pitched and a lot of guys who pitched but didn't pitch well.
And even when they said about the young kid coming in and making his debut, is he really ready for this stage? Or are you being forced because you don't have enough? And what happens? And that's the other thing. If you put these people in situations that they're not going to succeed, what's the long-term effect that you're doing to your product also? Too much too soon. I don't know. I mean, I had so much optimism, and I know this is only one game, and I haven't been listening because obviously we're talking ourselves. And I'll go home and kind of roll it back and go through some of it. But, yeah, you get a lot of people wanting baseball, wanting good baseball, wanting to be excited about baseball. And certainly, you know, when they think Marlins and how the Marlins just owned the Phillies last year to start out again where they're the dominator. Oh, my. All right, what do we have coming up? Let's see, this weekend. Sunday, Sixers are at noon, right?
Yes.
Yes. So that's the next live call we'll have here. Mr. Tom McGinnis will have that for us. Noon on Sunday, and that's against OKC. Chris Paul and the Thunder against the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think you'll see similar in terms of what Brett Brown does in terms of playing his lead guys. Most of them were in the 20 to 22, 23-minute range. I expect to see more of that. Will we get more than 13 minutes out of Joel Embiid? I will say this. He cannot do, you know, when you get to the seeded games, Joel's got to start playing his real minutes because I got to see for real that he's in shape and getting. I know you don't want him to get hurt, but you got to get up and down and make sure he's ready to go full tilt when the postseason gets underway. So that'll be on Sunday. Tomorrow, actually, the Phillies play again tomorrow. Right, Dylan? Are they another evening game tomorrow?
I think it's 4 o'clock tomorrow.
4 o'clock tomorrow. So they'll be back at it. Basically, we could say almost every day for the next 2 months, I say, are the Phillies playing tomorrow? And it'll be yes. So you'll have more live action with the Fightins. And we can set the table a little bit about what's happening down there in the bubble. And I think it'd be fair to look at some of the teams that the Sixers are looking at facing in the postseason. So what did Boston? Boston only posted 83 points, I believe, today. So maybe we'll check out the competition. What has Boston been up to? What has Miami been up to? And as I said, Indiana took a huge hit again today with Sabonis. DeMontis Sabonis having to leave the bubble to see a specialist for his serious foot injury, which is plantar fasciitis, and just having covered people who have had that, he might not be making it back inside the bubble because it's a serious injury. And if that is the case, keep in mind, folks, that he was an all-star. So it is the first team the Sixers play when they played their regular season games, the seeded games against the Pacers. And if they win that, they immediately would gain a game on Indiana. And they were tied in the standings, I do believe. But because of Indiana having won two of the three contests previously, that is why the Pacers are ahead of them in the number five seed. But I think it's, let's take a look at what others are doing in their scrimmages in the bubble. Who looks good? Who should be beware if the Sixers should come and cross their path sooner than later? I mentioned what Milwaukee did. Milwaukee certainly was the one team that's put up significant points in the bubble in their first outing. So we'll check that all out tomorrow. Want to make sure I thank Coach Lynam for joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. We had a good amount of callers, so thank you for joining the conversation. I thought there was really good optimism coming off the Sixers victory. I liked the biggest debate was really about who makes up your eight-man rotation, though I feel good about mine. And after Horford, Matisse and Furkan are my go-to, know they're getting at least their 14 minutes a game. And then anything after that, spray it in if you want some strategic scoring from Alec Burks or Glenn Robinson III, that's fine. But my two go-to guys in the eight-man rotation, Matisse and Furkan. All right, we're out of time. I'll be back at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 7, and we'll have some fun. Dylan, thanks for the help, buddy. I appreciate it. And I hope you enjoyed listening. And we thank you for listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.